The Bradfordville Blues Club has been in business now for many years, most recently under the leadership of Kim and Gary Anton, who have announced their upcoming retirement April 1st. With that, we're going to talk with Gary at length about his involvement with this marvelous work over the many years that he has. And in the second hour, I've got another amazing individual. Del Suggs will join us to talk about leadership and music and Tallahassee. Stay with me.
Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, brought to you by Widden Glass, Tallahassee's first name in glass for your home or office, and by Merry Maids. Call Merry Maids. Relax, and it's done.
In 1945, Jack Widden started a glass company in Tallahassee. Now over 75 years and three generations later, it's still working every day, doing just as Jack wanted, giving his customers real solutions for replacing window glass, providing custom-cut mirrors, and supplying superior bath and shower enclosures. Local building contractors know Widden Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. They prefer Widden because of their precision and mastery of eye-catching storefront glass and countertop glass. It's a fact. When you choose Widden Glass, you're working with real glass people who will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. It's what Jack Widden wanted, and it's been the Widden way of doing business for over 75 years. Widden Glass, Tallahassee's first family in glass since 1945. Call Widden Glass today or visit them online, 850-222-5781 or widdenglass.com.
Thank you, my friend, for making it part of your day in this moment of conversation we have at length with people who we find interesting and informative, perhaps inspirational, certainly contributive in so many ways. Del Suggs is one of those people. Going to talk with him at length in the second hour about his remarkable career as a musician, highly touted, highly appreciated public speaker, motivational speaker. He's been making his way around college campuses now for many years. An author, too. A book now in its second edition, I believe, Truly Leading. So we're going to talk with him about that effort and why leadership as a topic is so critical for him and for those that he is able to encourage. You know, he comes by way of a, I think, fifth generation of Suggs here in the North Florida area. Featured performer at the festival, the Florida Folk Festival, since 1983, and man alive, one of the faves that just graced those stages over there. And we're going to talk with him then about his music, his buddy Pierce Pettis, and so many other musicians that he has had opportunity to work with and work toward bringing North Florida music, what he calls saltwater music, to life. Yeah, a lot of folks know him and respect him musically. Some of the greats, we'd say, and he's one of them. Fifth generation Floridian. Mother's family settled here in North Florida back in the 1790s. Okay, so that beats me. As a singer, songwriter, and guitarist, he has earned the national recognition as a pioneer of this saltwater music and trop rock. Among those who are his contemporaries, like Jimmy Buffett, and Zach Brown, Kenny Chesney. It's going to be a fun conversation. You want to stay with me for that. And we'll try to take a moment here to say, when it comes to this business of leadership and the topic at large, there are certain characteristics that I think we all tend to associate with good leadership, people who find themselves in positions of leading others. So we're going to try to drill down with him a bit on that. I think you find that with our other guest, Gary Anton. He and Kim have been at the helm for so many years now, with the Bradfordville Blues Club. And it turns out that I think it can be argued that he and his wife, Kim, have made it possible for that club to stay alive, stay on top, and keep moving forward. And the assembly of blues musicians and others from around the region, from around this community, and across the country has really been impressive. Never fails to satisfy the interests of local fans, and never disappoints when it comes to the caliber of music that they bring at this humble little club that has historic significance. We're going to get into that with Gary as he joins us here in the first hour. Between these two men, I'll say this, I think you have great examples of those who are effective, contributive leaders in their own respective manner and in their own particular settings. You know, if you find yourself questioning whether or not you have a role to play as a leader, well, I would argue yes. Yeah, I mean, I don't care what your title is. I mean, you may be one of 1,000 employees in some large setting, some big company. Maybe you're a sole entrepreneur. Maybe you're self-employed. The qualities of leadership are not defined, in my humble opinion. And we'll test Dell's thought about this, but it is not about the title you bear. It is more so the manner in which you carry yourself, the level of commitment you make to providing excellence in all that you do. Now, of course, none of us are 100%. In fact, if we think we're 100%, we're probably guilty of overestimating ourselves. It seems to me part of leadership, maybe a foundational aspect of leadership, is humility. And that humility encourages us to be vulnerable and not in a manner that is manipulative. You know, we're going to try to look humble in front of the people. No, come on. Now, this is about what we do when nobody else is looking. This is about doing the job beyond the borders of the definition that was handed to us, or perhaps some job description that we have fashioned ourselves. Because it really comes back to what I want to accomplish for whoever it is that I'm serving. And that's the other aspect of this. Not only humility, but a sense of servanthood. You know, the servant leader kind of thing. We've heard that said often, but what does that really mean in terms of what you and I do on a daily basis? Even within our own families, whatever group of folks we hang with, our friends, maybe it's a civic group or your church, certainly on the job. But how about among those who are your loved ones, family and friends? Yeah. Where do you find opportunity within those confines to say, I'm going to go a little further. I'm going to go that extra mile. Remember that admonition? If somebody asks you to go a mile, then go two. If they ask for your cloak, well, give them your coat. You know, and you say, well, who would do that? I don't want to do that. Well, of course you don't. But you find yourself in a position where you're being empowered. You're being empowered to help others achieve. And I would present to you this notion that real leadership, or the strongest leaders among us, are not those who seek power for themselves, but rather they seek to empower others. So when you look around and you look within yourself, you look with the setting you find yourself, look for those moments when you can empower somebody else to do better, to do more, to find within them their life goals. What are those things that they want to achieve? What are they, you know, hope for? How can you be a part of that? I mean, sometimes you find yourself doing something very simple. Very simple. In fact, to me, some of those more spontaneous moments are more about reaffirming within each of us then what we're all about, what we care about. You know, our opinions, our beliefs, our attitudes, well, they all come to bear in those kind of moments. And an opinion is just an idea, right? But then you couple that with this degree of emotional commitment, a feeling then. If you say, well, all people are created equal, and then you couple that with a feeling of desire to express that and compassion for others, then comes the attitude. And that's the moment when you take that opinion coupled with that feeling, that belief position. Now you put it into action. And when an attitude is truly ingrained within you, you'll find yourself acting it out all the time.
Good morning, friends. This is your friend, Dr. Benjamin Franklin. We're talking with Brian Cerny on Tallahassee Talks.
If you are unfamiliar with the Bradfordville Blues Club, and yet, you know, somehow it just hasn't been showing up on your day timer, well, we're going to fix that, because I've got the guy, Gary Anton, and his wife, Kim, have been running this here by way of the BBC Fantastic Showground since 2002. So 20 years in the run, these two have been at the helm, sometimes holding on for dear life, sometimes wondering how in the world they ever got themselves into this situation. But at the core of them, and we're going to find this out here because we're going to start needling Gary here in a moment, at the core of that is this resolute love of blues music and blues artists and music in general, but I think a pretty substantial respect for what the Bradfordville Blues Club has done historically, what this meant a generation ago, what it means now for those who are just getting acquainted with something like the Chitlin Trail. Okay, so there's another one for you to write down in your note to self. Let's welcome our dear friend and our guest today, Gary Anton. How are you, sir?
Brian, I am doing well. Thanks for having me. I am pleased to be here.
For a 90-year-old man, you look fantastic. I want to know what your skin regimen is.
Well, I tell you what, for you're probably 20 years a little quicker, but
okay, I beg your pardon.
I'll get there soon.
I thought
enough.
You said you felt like you were 90 years old. That's
yes,
what.
Yes. My body tells me I'm 90. No question.
Well, you're doing fine, and we're glad that you were able to carve out some time for us, because, folks, in case you hadn't noticed, whether you're a club owner or a restaurant owner, man, if you've got the taco stand on the corner, 2021, 2020, we're not particularly kind to anyone trying to run that sort of venue, that kind of an operation. So, you know, the Blues Club itself, dealing with, social distancing and masking and just flat out having to shut down, and or bands that canceled at the last minute because, you know, either they were terrified or they got a positive test somewhere. So, Gary, let me say, welcome to 2022. Here's to a much better year for you and the club, and of course for all of us. But you found yourself, and I think you're still doing this, navigating in a way that you didn't have to before.
Yeah, I mean, COVID has just thrown a monkey wrench into society in general, right, and in particular the live music industry. We've taken a hit. I mean, not just us. I mean, a lot of small businesses, restaurants, but live music, we had to shut down for 2020. Fortunately, the community continued to support us, so the club was able to stay open and do some live shows that you guys broadcast for us, live stream. We didn't have people there. And then 2021 rolls around, and it's not getting any better. Mm-hmm. And we finally were able to open up for live shows in March of last year.
There you go.
knocking on wood.
Let's keep that going.
We're trying to keep going, and some of them outside, some of them inside when the weather permits.
That's been a remarkable advance, I think. Folks, if you've not been there, and please do so. You give yourself a gift. Go to the Bradfordville Blues Club on a Friday night or a Saturday night. Now you're doing Sundays as well.
Occasionally, yes.
Occasionally you'll do a Sunday. But in the interim there, you decided, okay, we're going to call this the BBC Under the Oaks.
Yeah, Blues Under the
Blues
Oaks.
Blues Under the Oaks.
Built we had this no choice because people couldn't come inside. We did not feel comfortable bringing people inside COVID was raging. And we're starting to get to that point again. Fortunately, Omicron doesn't seem to be as serious, but it's just as easily spread.
Right.
So, again, we're working on trying to bring our shows outside, weather permitting.
Sure.
Friday night is going to be cold, too cold for musicians. Sunday it might rain. So, you know, it's just another thing to, throwing a curveball at us and trying to hit a knuckleball. And we're getting there. We're alive.
Interesting that you pull the baseball reference in, because that's one of the things I want to point out with our listeners. The fact that you are located in a historic location, which at one time housed the American or the National Negro League baseball?
Actually, it wasn't a part of an official National League. It was a regional league.
Practice, okay.
Yeah, from the 1930s through the 1980s, a team played out there. They were called the CC Saints.
Uh-huh.
And remarkably, quite a few of the players made it into the American, or made it into the National League, the
major leagues. So it's like a minor league sort of thing there.
Yes, it was the North Florida South Georgia League, and it still exists. It was predominantly black teams from the Panhandle area. Wow. The league still exists. Only a couple of teams are still there, but they still play. But we had people out there playing who made it into the major leagues, made it into the Negro leagues. Andre Dawson played out there on that field.
Can you imagine?
It's a storied history.
It's like Field of Dreams sort of feeling. You know?
Yes. In fact, there was a corn field way out in.
Of course there was.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you hit the ball into the cornfield, that was the home run out in the left field.
Oh, man. Am I right? Jackie Robinson was one of those?
I don't think so. I've not heard his name. Andre Dawson, Terry Kennedy, Juan Bonilla.
Juan Bonilla.
The team recruited from FAMU and FSU.
Look at that.
So they had a very talented team, and they'd get thousands of people out there for the games, and that's how the music started.
Isn't that crazy?
Because the people would start coming out for the games, and they'd hang around by the bonfire that's been burning in that spot since the 1880s, making music, watch the baseball game, having a great time. And,
and enjoying some rather tasty catfish.
Catfish and
hush puppies and
and moonshine
yeah baby, who is it that prepares all that food?
Miss Ernestine has been frying the catfish out there for eons, dating back to around the time that the baseball team was playing.
Goodness.
The shack she fries in was built for that purpose.
That was their concession stand.
Yes, that was their concession stand.
Well, and in fact, that kind of history also dovetails with, I suppose, or overlays the notion of the Chitlin Trail. I want to get into talking about why this club was so significant to the African-American community and to our community at large. We're talking with Gary Anton. He is Mr. Bradfordville Blues Club, no doubt, no exaggeration. He and his wife, Kim, stalwart as they are, now in this year, in 2022, celebrating their 20th anniversary. They've been doing this for 20 years. Folks, you stay with me. We've got more Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Every day, Sellers makes life a little better for homeowners, helping them find the best design ideas for their homes with the best quality tile, carpet, and hardwood flooring. Even mosaics and ceramic and vinyl solutions are right there at their fingertips. Professional designers and seasoned advisors are ready with expert guidance to be certain they find the best solutions for their home. And best of all, Sellers works hard to bring the lowest prices and the highest quality products all in one location. That saves homeowners time and money. Maybe it's time for you to find the Sellers advantage for your home or your office. See for yourself this week at Sellers' spacious showroom, conveniently located on Capitol Circle Northeast, just north of Mahan Drive. Or find them online at sellerstile.com. Style, quality, and design at Sellers in Tallahassee. 656-8453. Hello, I'm Brian Cerny, host of Tallahassee Talks Radio.
And I'm Coach Sue Semrau.
The food assistance charities in Tallahassee need our help during this critical time of year. And the businesses sponsoring the Tallahassee Food Challenge want to remind each of us to take the challenge by making an additional contribution and donating food.
As the school year comes to an end, many children no longer have access to school-based food support programs. As a result, supplies run low, while the needs for assistance is even higher. Join us in giving generously during this critical time of need. You'll be helping feed hungry children and families across our community.
Go to TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com to learn how you can help and where you can donate. Your donation will go directly to these charities that do so much to help the needs of so many.
Take the challenge. Fill a bowl.
Feed the hungry. Do it now. Go to TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com.
Bringing you whatever Tallahassee is talking about this week. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're back. We're talking with Gary Anton about the Bradfordville Blues Club and about the significance of this club. Now, you mentioned the CC League, Capital City. Is that the,
no, actually, no. There's a very interesting story behind that. One of them is that as told to me by some of the Henry family, bought this property in the 1880s, and they've owned it since then. They have parts of it out to some of their descendants over the years. But at the time, they were having, it was a community center. It was a vibrant little community. They were having large gatherings, including the baseball games. And as Inez Haynes told me, one of the owners, the high sheriff didn't take a cot and all these black folks having a good time out there. And they were giving, the sheriff was giving them a difficult time about the drinking and the partying and the baseball. They enlisted the services of an attorney, and I have talked to one of the attorneys who was involved, who kind of did an end run. And as legend and lore has it, it became the only country club in the state of Florida without a golf club, golf course. But with the country club designation, they could have their parties, they could serve alcohol, and the high sheriff couldn't bother them. So the CC at one point stood for country club. Prior to that, I think it was it stood for the community club.
I got you.
Community center.
I got you.
And but then later, as the baseball team was playing, it was called the CC Saints. Some of the folks would say that the CC stood for the country club.
And the fact is, prior to it being the Bradfordville Blues Club, it was, isn't it Dave's CC Club?
Yes, in fact, it was the CC Club. Okay. The Henry family and most of the locals known it as the CC Club.
Right.
It closed in the late 80s for a short period of time, and Dave Clater reopened it.
I see.
As Dave's CC Club.
I got you.
And so it continued on with the name the CC Club.
And in that capacity, there is this thread, this line that transcends over the many decades and even into another century. in which prior to desegregation, blacks were not welcome in most venues. We learned that when we saw the film The Blue Book.
Mm-hmm.
Or was it The Green Book? I always forget that. It's Blue
Green
Book.
Book.
The Green Book, thank
Green
you.
Green Book.
Green Book. Jack Hadley has been on the show and has the Jack Hadley Museum in Thomasville, Black History Museum. And he talks about that. And they had purchased the Imperial Hotel up there, which was one of those facilities, one of those venues, you'd say, or hospitality venues that welcomed African Americans. And the Bradfordville Blues Club was part of that whole circuit, we'd say. But it was referred to as the Chitlin' Trail. Tell us a little bit about that.
It was the Chitlin' Circuit.
Circuit, okay.
Okay, and the Chitlin' Circuit actually was a circuit for black musicians, jazz, R&B, blues, throughout the Midwest, the Northeast, all the way down through the South, not too much west of the Mississippi River, where black musicians could play predominantly before black audiences.
Yeah.
And Tallahassee had about three of them in Frenchtown.
Hmm.
One was the Redbird Cafe. That's the granddaddy of the Tallahassee one.
There Adderley was also, and right,
yes,
Ray Charles.
Oh man, the people that played there. There was
time.
Also the Two Spot, and I'm trying to remember the name of the other one.
Huh.
Now, those clubs would shut down at 2 o'clock. By city ordinance.
Uh-huh.
After hours, some of the musicians would then sneak out to the BBC or to the CC Club,
right,
and sit in with whomever happened to be playing there.
To
so
be
it
a
was
fly
known as the
wall.
After hours Chitlin'
yeah,
Circuit.
post 2 a.m. That's where they'd end up.
Yes, until the sun came up or the cows came home, whichever happened earlier.
In that capacity, when did you realize that this was something you and Kim needed to do? You need to be involved. How did that come about?
Well, I've always been a blues fan, dating back to the 60s. And when I heard about Dave CC opening up, I had never been to the CC Club, but when I heard about Dave's opening up, I went out there.
Mm.
And just trying to find a place is an adventure.
Moses Lane is not well-known.
It's a goat trail at best. And when I finally made my way up to the club itself before even walking in, I thought I had found Nirvana.
Look at that.
Now, here's a blues club in the middle of nowhere, surrounded by all these stately oak trees. And
massive.
I walked in, and there were three people there. There was Dave Clater, his wife Elizabeth, and a musician, and me. That was it. And I just fell in love with the place. I
Look
go, man, this is the... an authentic Chitlin' Circuit blues club located in the backwoods of Tallahassee. And I just became enamored with it. Kim and I became enamored with it. Dave put the place on the map. Dave brought in so many of the great blues musicians of the day. I mean, we're talking about the people who created the music. Bobby Blue Bland and so many others. And when he and Elizabeth moved and had to close the club, Kim and I realized we can't let this thing die.
Yeah.
We had no design to own a blues club, but given the historical significance of the club, of the music, the quality of the players that have been there, we said, why don't we try to keep it going?
Right, right.
So we took it over when he closed, and 20 years later, we're still going at it, just having
Incredible.
The time of our lives.
Incredible. And by the way, you say that you hadn't any particular notions about being club owners. You were a pretty successful attorney back in those days, and now.
Oh man, don't tell that to these people.
I know they're gonna hate you for it.
People
but that's okay.
Like me out of the club. You know, I'm redeeming myself for all the crap I pulled in the 40 years as a
that's
lawyer.
That's okay. Well, you're not alone, so you could just hide in the crowd. But let me just give our listeners a shot at this here. He is a former member of the Blues Foundation Board of Directors. Did that for looks like about 6-7 years. member. He is a current member of the foundation's executive committee.
Former.
Oh, okay. A former member, and then an education committee member and heart committee member, licensed attorney in the state of Florida, and practiced civil trial law and labor and employment lawyer. Okay, all that stuff. Now retired. He wants to emphasize that. And a musician. And I guess you've hung up your axe. You're not chopping wood anymore. But
well, I used to think I could play the guitar back in my high school days. And
before you bought a blues club.
Yes, I even went to Berklee College of Music, and then I started seeing these people showing up at Dave's. Yeah. And I'm going, holy Moses!
I'll be over here. Yeah, call me if you need me.
I have never played my guitar, and I would not embarrass myself or degrade the stage by getting back on that.
Boy, I identify with that. Guitar. I do a mean Joe Cocker, but son of a gun, you're not going to get me up there doing that. Folks, we've got Gary Anton, and we're talking about this remarkable little club that has had such an impact, not only in our community, but really around the country and maybe beyond that, because of its devotion to preserving and advancing and simply recognizing the value of blues music. It's called the Bradfordville Blues Club. We're going to learn more as we keep Gary with us here for another few minutes. You stay with me. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks.
Witten Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. When you call Witten Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Witten's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Witten Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. Witten Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
Hi, I'm Josh, and this is an ad for Supersigns. We were going to do an ad that was funny or maybe really dramatic. You know, something clever. But that just didn't work. So I'm just going to tell you, Supersigns is great. I mean, they're really great. And it's not just me saying it. Lots of people posting and talking to their friends. Here's one. We are so happy with all our signs and banners by Supersigns. Highly recommend. Here's another. These guys are awesome. They run their business with great quality and service. Our lighted sign looks fantastic. I can't rave enough. Supersigns does the really big stuff, like outdoor lighted signs, vehicle wraps, wall murals, and all the banners, the yard signs, and indoor signs too. So for your business or your birthday party, Supersigns is your sign company. So that's it. That's our ad. Supersigns is great. I mean, really, really, really great. You should call them, 422-1883, or go to their website, yoursupersigns.com. How's that for clever?
Hi, I'm Jerry.
And I'm Pete.
And we're with the Jerry Thigpen Trio, and you're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
So it's not like, oh, you know, we've always had this wonderful ambition that someday, you know, we'll do. No, what they saw was the prospect of this historic, and it is, the Bradfordville Blues Club is registered, isn't it, on the National Historic Registry?
Yes, it's the site of the Mississippi Blues Trail marker titled From Mississippi to Florida.
There you go.
It's the only one in the state of Florida dedicated to a club. There's one other dedicated to Pensacola, the city, but not a club. But this is the only one in the state of Florida recognized by the State of Mississippi Blues Commission.
Indeed.
For its historic contributions to the blues.
And, you know, and for those, again, who may not even be blues fans, certainly you can appreciate the fact that some of these artists we're talking about are beloved local artists who have played there often. I think of Johnny and, you know, and who are some of the other locals that you've hosted? Brett Wellman and the Stone Cold Blues Band. And that guy, he and his buddy, they won a regional award, I guess, or they were in a contest. They went to a national showdown.
Yes, the International Blues Competition in Memphis a few years back.
Yeah. And
there's a vibrant blues community in Tallahassee. JC and the Backscratchers.
Oh man, they're awesome.
Focus on the old style blues back in the 40s and the 50s.
Yeah, yeah. They played recently too, I think, didn't they? Weren't they here recently? Or am I dreaming? I don't know.
That is.
Who was it that I was thinking of? Back in here a few. It seemed like maybe a couple months ago, but. It's okay, because you know what we've done? We've recorded all of those live broadcasts, and I mentioned this earlier for the sake of our listeners. If by way of wanting to just taste and see how good this is, and you haven't been able to get out to the club, you need to listen in on Saturday nights at 9 o'clock, because Moose Magnificat Radio carries that hour of broadcast featuring the Bradfordville Blues Club live from this historic location. And some of those people that you have been able to bring to us themselves, blues from times past or from regions of the country, there's a Chicago blues, right? And there's a Memphis.
Yeah, a lot of people see the blues as some old guy sitting on a bar stool, drunker than a rodeo goat, singing about lost loves.
That would have been me.
And yes, there's a lot of booze involved in the blues. There's a lot of mules kicking in your stall in the blues, but it's really an upbeat, very enjoyable, danceable music.
Yeah, it's true.
And with all musics, it's progressed over time. Nothing stays the same.
Sure.
And it has evolved. And many of the bands now, you've got the Chicago blues and the Mississippi blues, but you've also got rock blues. And many of the musicians are mixing the genres, jazz and blues, R&B, soul.
Right.
Crying out loud, we even have electric banjo players coming into the club nowadays. So it has grown.
With that in mind, it has been said to me, and jazz may be in the same capacity, that blues is really the American soul. It is more so the amalgamation then, and this blend of all of these ideas and motives and parts of the country that have all kind of come together. That, as you say, it continues. I mean, that's an ongoing thing.
It continues. The JC and the Backscratchers are focusing primarily on the old school blues, and then people like Brett Wellman are featuring more of the Chicago later style blues.
Right.
Some of the other bands are featuring more guitar oriented blues.
Right. And then you have those that come out of New Orleans, and they've got their
crying out loud.
Right. And they've got a lot of catfish in there, man.
That's a gumbo.
That's lots of gumbo, man. And that's the cool thing about music to me, especially blues music. It's like, and you say gumbo. Think about that. I mean, how many different kinds of gumbo are there, and why? And because everyone who creates that recipe does it with their little twist on it, their little flair, right? And I think what you have done then, and what you're doing, you and Kim, as the curators, you know, the watchdogs, you stand at the watch, and you're doing what you can, everything you can, to keep this moving forward for our sakes, but for the sake of the music and for the sake of those who are coming behind.
Oh, exactly. And one of the things that has really been so satisfying is seeing some of the younger folks who started playing at the club when they were 13 and who are now professional musicians making their mark, Tallahassee musicians, Rick Lawler, Katie Skeen, so many other Tallahassee musicians who grew up here have blossomed and have found their way. And we have so many that are still here that are doing the same thing. So, seeing it transition from the older folks, one of the saddest things is looking up on the walls and all the portraits. So many of those folks have passed on. But now we've got the younger group coming in.
Yeah,
the music is alive and well.
Like the club itself. Do you imagine a time when you might have to relocate? Is that even on the boards, or do you?
No, I don't see us relocating. That club is the perfect spot. It's the epitome of what a Chitlin Circuit juke joint is.
Yeah.
Succession planning, yes. Kim and I are not young. We're both retired. We both like to start doing some other things. So we've got some succession plans in the works so that it'll continue on. But I don't, you know, you couldn't, unless you could put that place on a barge and move it somewhere, you couldn't really.
It's like a time capsule. It really is. You step into that thing and you are stepping back in time.
You drive up Moses Lane, you turn the clock back 50 years.
It's the truth, man. We love it, and we love you guys for doing it. And Tallahassee, I want to tell you something. You can't call yourself a Tallahassean if you haven't been out there to see Gary and Kim do what they do, and these amazing, remarkably talented musicians giving you the best blues you're going to hear. It's called the Bradfordville Blues Club. Remember, too, that we broadcast live every Saturday night at 9 o'clock on Moose, so there's lots of ways that you can participate. And you know what you need to do? You need to go out there and enjoy the show, buy up a bunch of tickets and give them to your friends, and then just write Gary a check for, like, I don't know, 10 grand. That would be helpful.
Yeah, I'd retire real quick.
Well, I mean, you know, we got some back bills we got to pay, and we got to, you know.
Keep the electricity on.
2021 was not kind, and we're still in that kind of pushback and recover, and hopefully the bands won't be canceling on him at the last minute. That's a nightmare. But that's another story, and we've just plumb run out of time. Gary, thank you for being here.
Oh, Brian, thank you so much for having me. And for how many years has it been now that you've been doing our Saturday night shows?
I want to say it's four, but then again, I don't know.
Who's counting?
I'm not really paying attention to that. I just know that it's our pleasure, and it's really our privilege to be able to do it. I mean, we're the only radio station that's doing this. And if anybody else wanted to do it, I'd like to have 10 radio stations carrying your stuff.
Well, I tell you what.
But in the meantime, we're there for you.
Well, and we're here for you as well. You're doing a great thing.
Thank you, sir.
For the Tallahassee music scene.
We love it. So there you have my conversation with Gary Anton from a few months back. Hope you have enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed speaking with him. We're going to continue this broadcast, if you'll stay with me, after the top of the hour. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Witten Glass has been taking care of families since 1945.
Experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best, like Witten's top-of-the-line bath enclosures. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Witten Glass, and they provide precise installation.
Witten Glass, Tallahassee's first family in glass. Online at wittenglass.com. Call 850-222-5781.
Folks, there are four ways to shine in life, and Merry Maids has it all going on. Experience, reliability, thoroughness, and professionalism. Well, that's why we rely on Merry Maids right here at our studios, because, you know, I do need a little shine from time to time. And my friends at Merry Maids can make it happen with guaranteed satisfaction, screened and trained employees, bonded and insured performance, even a free consultation. Merry Maids can customize cleanings to fit most budgets and fit your busy schedule with cleanings on a weekly, bi-weekly, monthly, or an on-call basis. Merry Maids will deep clean your home on that first visit, something that you've probably been wanting to do, but you don't have to. Call Merry Maids. Relax, and it's clean. Right here in Tallahassee, call 386-2205 or find them online at merrymaids.com. That's 386-2205. Welcome back to the second hour, Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, reminding you that we're available to you at any time online, TallahasseeTalks.com, and broadcast on Moose Magnificat Saturday mornings at 9, Sunday afternoons at 3, and Wednesday afternoons at 5:30, so plenty of opportunity there. If that doesn't work, subscribe to the podcast, whatever your favorite podcast app may be. Yeah, and so that's a great way to kind of stay in tune with the conversations we have with so many remarkable folks. And let's not forget that if you're an early riser on a Saturday morning, 7 a.m., bright and early, 93.3 Real Talk in Tallahassee. They are a good group of folks over there that carry the show for us in its entirety. And a pleasure to be a part of their Saturday morning lineup, 7 to 9 on Real Talk here in Tallahassee. Folks, it's really a sort of community when you look at the people who are involved in broadcasting and entertainment of any kind and musicians and such. There's a sort of camaraderie, I would say, or certainly an understanding of what it takes among professionals to put on a show, you know, however you define that word show, but performance in its broadest sense requires, among other things, dedication, even when everything inside of you is screaming, stop. You are on a fool's errand. This is not going to work. But somehow, either it's a, you know, it's something that's genetically wrong with you. You were born with this deformity. Or you have people around you, probably both, that say, no, this is a good thing. You should keep going and keep trying. Well, that's what you find with people like Del Suggs. And he is persistent in his determination to be of benefit to others. We've learned that over the years. And he's going to be with me here in this second hour of the show. Of course, you heard the same thing in regard to Gary Anton and his wife Kim and all of the 21 years they were at the helm there, or have been at the helm, with the Bradfordville Blues Club. And if you haven't done this, let me just reference the fact that, and you may be not a Facebooker, but if you are, you owe it to yourself to go and check it out, the Bradfordville Blues Club page, because there's a post there that he has anchored at the top of the page, like you can do. And, you know, he talks about the 21 years and the privilege of keeping that blues club alive and its historic significance. And the people, oh my goodness. References not only the people within his own organization that were faithful, have been faithful, and likely will continue on. There have been talks going on among some of the group there that leads us to think that the club is not done, even though they have determined that they're retiring as of April 1st, Gary and Kim. There are some folks who have expressed an interest in preserving the club, and so that looks like it's coming together. You can't imagine that after all of these many years, and certainly well past the 21 years that Gary and Kim have had this thing in their hands, its historic significance going back to, you know, the days when black artists found themselves having to play in places where segregation was in force, and the club was one of those. And so they found themselves hosting people from all over the country who would come through there. And Gary was kind enough to share that with us in the first hour. Again, if you've missed it, don't worry, because you can go and listen to us online at TallahasseeTalks.com. If you have opportunity to do that, I encourage you to do so. Meanwhile, here in this hour, we've got this, again, remarkable person, another stalwart individual in Del Suggs, and we're going to talk at length about his determination to not only bring good to the world, but to work that at a very personal level. And so he's been doing these presentations over the years as a speaker at various college campuses that he really has crafted, I suppose, in all of the conversations that he's had with college students and faculty, and being able to drill down with them in especially this business of leadership and what it means to be effective and what leadership really means, even at a very fundamental level, and it can play out in terms of your everyday life. So we'll do that with Del here momentarily. We're going to hear some of his music as well. I should take opportunity here to share a couple of announcements from our friends at Leon County, celebrating Women's History Month here in March with library events and various resources. So Leon County government celebrating the achievements and contributions of women during Women's History Month with an exhibit, with story times and resources, all brought to you by Leon County, Lori Collins, Leon County Public Library System. So you got thematic book lists and movie watch lists, a traveling book club. Yeah, man. Celebrating the Women Who Tell Our Stories exhibit. Well, that's going on now through the end of the month. And then you've got a preschool story time designed for children ages 3 to 6. So that's cool. Check that out online. Find out when that's scheduled. Family story time is Saturday, March 25th at 11 a.m. That's at the Dr. B.L. Perry Junior Branch Library. Families can enjoy songs, rhymes, and stories in honor of Women's History Month. You want to get a complete listing of those resources and events, you go to leoncountyfl.gov/womenshistorymonth. leoncountyfl.gov/womenshistorymonth. So there you go, folks. Put that one on your calendar for sure. Let me also remind you that during this time of the year, we spend a lot of time promoting and encouraging us all to give generously to local food charities. So the Tallahassee Food Challenge that we've now been operating, I guess, 12 years, well, it's all there to remind you and I that hunger never takes a holiday. And if you'll take it upon yourself to take the challenge and fill a bowl and feed the hungry, well, then you're in line with the mission that is Tallahassee Food Challenge. And it's all courtesy of our very loyal and contributive sponsors. This year's presenting sponsor, Wooden Glass, who for its lifetime, now a company that started in 1945, one of the last remaining legacy businesses still owned by the same family. It happens that you'll find companies of that kind among our group of sponsors, Sellers here in Tallahassee. Sellers Tile, known for many years as Sellers Tile, simply going by the name Sellers now. They're on Capital Circle Northeast, just north of Mahan Drive. Well, those folks, man alive, they love this town, and they have gone full force in contributing their support to the Tallahassee Food Challenge. And of course, our good friends at Gain Street Pies. Now, I think 3 or 4 years into this, this is how it works. They take their money, their advertising dollars, and provide us with the funding we need so that we can go out and purchase the Tallahassee TV stations and local outdoor advertising with Lamar, with the radio stations. And this year, 93.3 Real Talk is our official radio partner in this. As a media partner, they are donating a good amount of their airtime as well, along with Lamar. So you have these alliances, WTXL, Channel 27. They, in turn, have said, no, we want to support you in this effort. We believe in what you're doing. And so we're grateful to all of these folks. You can find them listed there for you. And I encourage you to go to their websites, review, give them a nice review, send them an email. Hey, thank you for helping support this effort to encourage us all to give generously. It's the whole point of this campaign. And doing it in such a way that it doesn't put any burden on any of these food charities that otherwise work so very hard to make sure that hungry kids have a good meal. Folks, stay with me. I've got Del Suggs standing by, and we'll be back after this.
Folks, there are 4 ways to shine in life, and Merry Maids has it all going on. Experience, reliability, thoroughness, and professionalism. Well, that's why we rely on Merry Maids right here at our studios, because, you know, I do need a little shine from time to time. And my friends at Merry Maids can make it happen with guaranteed satisfaction, screened and trained employees, bonded and insured performance, even a free consultation. Merry Maids can customize cleanings to fit most budgets and fit your busy schedule with cleanings on a weekly, biweekly, monthly, or an on-call basis. Merry Maids will deep clean your home on that first visit, something that you've probably been wanting to do, but you don't have to. Call Merry Maids. Relax, and it's clean. Right here in Tallahassee, call 386-2205 or find them online at merrymaids.com. That's 386-2205.
Del Suggs is a singer, songwriter, and guitarist from the beaches of North Florida. He has appeared in concerts at colleges, universities, and festivals all across the country and the Caribbean. Del has appeared at over 700 colleges and universities across the U.S. and has performed at such prestigious venues as the World Music Festa in Japan, Kerrville Folk Festival, the Spirit Square Lyric Theater, Sarasota Opera House, and since 1983 has been with a featured artist at Florida Folk Festival. He is our guest today. How are you, Del?
Doing great, Brian. It's good to see you.
Been just a minute since you were here last, but I do understand that you... you stay on the run, and I have this other note here. In 2016, Campus Activities Magazine named you one of the top five artists of the past 25 years, an honor recognizing your lengthy career and continuing popularity. I could go on. This goes quite a ways. I'd rather just talk with you about your music and about this remarkable contribution in the business of speaking to college campuses, to students around the country, largely in relation to leadership and leadership development. Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's, people ask me sometimes, they say, what are you teaching these kids in leadership? What does that mean? I say, it's life skills. It's the things they need to learn and to embody to be successful in life, whether they go on to be leaders, political leaders or corporate leaders or whatever, or they just want to live a successful life. That's what it's all about.
Indeed. In my opening remarks today, I referenced that idea on your behalf simply because when we take the notion of leadership, as you've said, every one of us have a role to play as a leader in some setting. If it's among with our kids, with our families, our friends, on the job, whatever. Leadership is not a position as such. It is more about a person's character.
It's really more attitude and your character and your ability to present yourself in that manner and to think of yourself in that manner.
Why is it, do you think, that college students need this at this particular juncture in our history?
Well, college students, that's it. If you remember your college years, that's when you're really trying to make those decisions. You're trying to figure out who you are, where you're going, and they're really amenable to some direction at that point in their life. And the skills that I really seek to impart to them are things that really will help them the rest of their lives. Things like time management, things like how to treat other people with respect. And just some, interpersonal skills and things like that.
Even balancing your checkbook is a good idea, right?
Absolutely.
Speaking of life skills, I'm working that one myself. Someday I'll get there.
Yeah. Well, I've got a brand new program. I call it Life Skills 101 that I have just debuted and roll that out. And students love it. And I talk about financial literacy, things like paying off your credit cards and dealing with debt. I talk about time management, how to get your handle on all the time, because everybody has the same 24/7, but some people get a lot of stuff done and some people don't.
Indeed.
You know, interpersonal skills, how to get along with other people. Talk some about critical thinking, which is something I really try to work on with college students, because they see so much online and they don't evaluate the evidence that they have.
No.
And so I try to teach them to deal with that. And then the last component of life skills to me is what I call grit, just being resilient, And I tell all these college students that I work with at the end of this program, I say, you are going to fail someday. And it doesn't matter how many times you fail, it's how many times you get back up.
Are you concerned about those students, we'll say people, now in their late teens and into their early 20s, college age generally, concerned about their ability to deal with or consider failure as just part of life's lessons, because it seems to me that there's a kind of message there that says you're not allowed to fail and failure is not an option. I think that's counterproductive.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and I understand, you know, where they come from. It's, you know, this is the generation that has been sheltered in a lot of ways. Uh-huh. And because of the craziness of the world, they haven't been allowed, you know, what we used to call free range kids. They yeah. haven't been allowed to be free range. I remember, you know, during the summers when I was in elementary school, my mom would go to work and I'd have the day to myself, you know, and I'd just hop on my bike and ride all over town. But you can't do that anymore. And I know that's the way the world is. But because of that, a lot of students haven't had the chance to get out and learn how to think and how to fend for themselves and learn how to make those decisions. And they haven't had a chance to fail, you know, and we hate to see them fail, but we also know that they need to fail because yeah. you learn so much more from your failures than you right. do from your successes.
Right. I echo that with you. I grew up in the Seattle area.
Oh, yeah. Beautiful.
So our elementary school was, you know, 5-6 blocks away. As a first, you know, six-year-old first grader, I'm walking to school and back every day.
Oh, absolutely.
Through yeah. about 2 acres of wooded, vacant lot. And what I found bizarre, I suppose, sort of startling, is that when my wife and I started having kids and they were elementary school aged, the thought of them walking from our house to their school, which was, again, within a matter of blocks, maybe half mile at the most, I couldn't even imagine that.
Yeah.
And then I started asking then, what has happened to us? How did that happen?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, a lot of it is the world, although, you know, there have always been these horrific crimes that have taken place, yeah. but we're more aware of them now.
Well, that may be the part of it that we yeah. are most subject to, isn't it? The headlines that come at us, and it's 24/7.
Right. Yeah. Right. And so we deal with that, and I understand. I don't fault anybody for trying to protect their children.
Yeah.
I mean, but you got to understand that you have to let them fail at
sometimes.
Some point.
Yeah.
Because because you'll just learn from that. I have friends who are college professors, and they talk about how, you know, they'll have a student whose mom will call and say, "Why did Johnny get this grade on his exam?"
Yes. Yes.
And the professor will say, "Well, first of all, I can't even talk to you about this because their federal laws prohibit me from talking about right. your student to anybody but the student. And so yep. unless I get a signed authorization, I can't talk. I know you're his mother, but that's the law." Yeah.
yeah.
And then you have, you know, some millennial students who are just it's hilarious to me because they're so used to working together and they're so good at cooperating
yes.
together that sometimes I had a professor from University of Arkansas tell me that he had a student who got a D on an exam, and the professor, you know, he came to see the professor afterwards and said, I really love this class, and I really feel like I got so much more out of it than this grade is reflecting. So, but I think we can work this out, you know. And the professor was saying, "No, that's not the way it works. You know, you take the test and you get the grade you get. We don't work it out. We don't negotiate a test."
My first job, I was in high school. I went to work for a guy who was a wedding caterer, and it would be kind of me to say he was the biggest waste of his own time.
Okay.
yeah. And yet, my father, probably like your parents, taught you, no matter what the job is, go beyond that definition.
Right.
And so I found myself in the basement of a building polishing shoes. The guy would always, he did everything, right?
So, sure.
Or I was fixing the little fountain for the wedding reception, or driving the truck. You know, all of that became part of what was training for me. And you say life skills.
Right.
I learned how to quit.
Yeah.
I learned how to turn in a resignation.
Sure.
So what you're saying is, okay, we're in a different time, different era, different understanding for all of us.
Right.
But we've got to try to hold on to this idea that life is about trial and error.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And we've got to learn to be productive.
Uh-huh.
You know, we can't be frozen by our fears.
Huh.
But because we need to understand that at some point we will fail, and it's again, it's not about how many times you fail. It's about how many times you pick yourself back up. We all get knocked down.
Yeah. And I'm going to segue a little bit here before we take this break, because folks, we're going to take some time and hear some of the music from this gentleman. Your music reflects a lot of that. There's a lot of real life in the songs that you have written. So we'll get into that right after this break. Stay with me, folks. We've got Del Suggs talking about real life.
Folks, there are four ways to shine in life, and Merry Maids has it all going on. Experience, reliability, thoroughness, and professionalism. Well, that's why we rely on Merry Maids right here at our studios, because, you know, I do need a little shine from time to time. And my friends at Merry Maids can make it happen with guaranteed satisfaction, screened and trained employees, bonded and insured performance, even a free consultation. Merry Maids can customize cleanings to fit most budgets and fit your busy schedule with cleanings on a weekly, bi-weekly, monthly, or an on-call basis. Merry Maids will deep clean your home on that first visit, something that you've probably been wanting to do, but you don't have to. Call Merry Maids. Relax, and it's clean. Right here in Tallahassee, call 386-2205. Or find them online at merrymaids.com. That's 386-2205.
We're back. We're talking with Del Suggs. Fine-looking man. Too bad it's not TV, because he really looks good.
Well, I'm trying.
For a man in his late 70s, he's just...
I'm holding up pretty well, aren't
you're I? Doing okay, son. Yes, sir. But I think you and I are pretty much of the same vintage generation and all. We talked a little briefly there about how life was so much different then in terms of what we expect of ourselves and what we were willing to throw down and do and be a part of. And never really expected anybody to hand me anything. And if that happened, that was awesome. I mean, that was remarkable and unexpected. But
and you were grateful for it.
Grateful for it, yeah. Gratitude is a big part of leadership, isn't it?
Absolutely. And and one of the things that I really try to work on with these college students that I deal with in these leadership programs is what I call an attitude of gratitude. I don't want people to have an attitude of gratitude. I want you to always be grateful for the things that you have and the things that you get, because we are not only the luckiest people on the planet, we are the luckiest people in the history of the planet.
Yeah.
And it's really, got to embrace that. You've got to understand that. And you've got to develop this attitude of gratitude and be grateful for what you have and to let other people know how much you appreciate them.
Okay, that begs the question, my friend. Where does this wisdom, and I'll call it that, this understanding come from for you? Is this how this has come by way of life experiences of your own and just observations? And, I mean, your fifth generation Floridian kind of stuff, right?
Right.
So talk about where this all kind of is grounded for you.
Well, I mean, it's grounded, it was grounded my mom who pretty much raised me. My dad died when I was very young, when I was just 4, but he had a very strong family. His brothers and sister, who were a huge part of my family especially when I was a young child, and his brothers really stepped in and became surrogate dad for me and helped me along. And they were all just country people. I mean, they were, my grandparents were sharecroppers. Wow. But
they were hard work.
Yeah. And thankless. But they were just a salt of the earth people, and that's what
which
they did.
Means to me, salt of the earth means that's the person who sits down at the end of that hard day, folds his hands and says, "Thank you, God, I've got food on the table. Thank you for these people who are sitting with me."
Absolutely.
And I'm still here.
Right, right. and grateful for those things. So,
wow.
Yeah, so I think a lot of it comes from that. A lot of it comes from the fact that, again, my parents let me do things. And I started out, I started out playing music when I was in the 9th grade. And when I was in 10th grade, I had my first band.
Wow.
And I was playing, teen clubs and growing up on Panama City Beach. I mean, when I was a junior in high school, I was playing the bars on the beach. They didn't know how young we were, but we would go in and play these places.
You've had that same mustache, as far as I know.
I grew this my freshman year at Florida State, and it's been there ever since, yeah.
Well, speaking of music and all that that means, because that's a mouthful, folks, easily we could spend the next 2 hours talking about Dale's music and the volume and the significance of it. But so much of your music seems to me is grounded in real life experiences. It's what you like to write about and sing about, isn't that right?
Yeah, because that's what's important, you know. And it's important that your songs be relatable to other people, but it's also important that they reflect your own your own life. You know, I'm a singer songwriter, which means, you know, basically I write songs about my own life and things that go on, and they're not all, you know, autobiographical, but they're all about things that I've experienced or that I've witnessed in other people.
Yeah,
and seen
they're genuine. We're going to take a moment and share with the audience here one of those. It's called Broken Places. Tell us about that song.
Yeah, Broken Places is a song I wrote really about how we pick ourselves up and dust ourselves off. And, you know, and it's basically the fact that we there's this great line from Ernest Hemingway where he said, "Life breaks everyone, and afterwards many are stronger in the broken places."
Yes.
And it's just so true. You know?
Indeed. Stronger in the broken places. And so we're going to take the rest of this moment here. We're going to share with you the song. Because it, at the other side of this, we'll get through our break, and as we come back, I want to explore that notion with you a little further. It's again part of those life lessons that you're trying to help us all better incorporate. And I, you know, there's still hope for me, because as long as I can stay in touch with you, I know that I'll keep getting good stuff.
We're all growing
from
all
your
the time.
Pen and from your voice, folks. Let's take a moment here. This is called "Broken Places," Del Suggs.
By the wind, where the limbs have snapped, it is healed back over, never to be broken again. In the same way, our spirits are shattered. With each foe we contend, and our hearts grow calloused. Our heads grow thick, and our patience grows alarmingly thin. We grow stronger in the broken places, broken places, men. We grow stronger in the broken places. Hope we don't get hurt again. It's like a favorite pair of jeans, old and faded. Just the lightest shade of blue, but the fabric holds where the patches are. Find another place to wear through. So we bob and weave, we dance around the ring. Every round that we spar, and the glove never touches us the same place twice, till we finally drop our guard. We grow stronger in the broken places, broken places, men. We grow stronger in the broken places. Hope we don't get hurt again. We learn to forget. the same pace. Cause it's hard to heal when the wound is fresh. And you're trying not to bleed, but the hole will close and the pain will stop just as surely as you breathe. As we grow stronger in the broken places, broken places, men. We grow stronger in the broken places, broken places, men. We grow stronger in the broken places. Hope we don't get hurt again. Don't get hurt again.
Hello, I'm Brian Cerny, host of Tallahassee Talks Radio.
And I'm Jeremy Matlow, co-owner of Gain Street Pies in Tallahassee.
The food assistance charities in Tallahassee need our help during this critical time of year. And the businesses sponsoring the Tallahassee Food Challenge want to remind each of us to take the challenge by making an additional contribution and donating food.
Gain Street Pies is honored to be sponsoring this year's Tallahassee Food Challenge. Join us in giving generously during this critical time of year when food supplies run low. You'll be helping feed hungry children and families in our community.
Go to TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com to learn how you can help and where you can donate. Your donation will go directly to these charities that do so much to help the needs of so many.
Take the challenge. Fill a bowl.
Feed the hungry. Do it now. Go to TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com.
We're back. We're talking with Del Suggs, who for most of us is a name that we've said many times, and largely because the guy has contributed so well to this community over many, many years through a lot of different efforts. A lot of those things that you've been involved in, Del, probably are behind the scenes for a lot of folks, and the ones that come to mind are things like the Winter Festival that, you know, Steve Meisberg had this vision. And
I'm still involved in that. I still do the entertainment, plan the entertainment for that every single year since it started.
There you go. Exactly. Well, in that respect, I think you demonstrate for us the things that you talk about in this business of leadership development. And I want to quote this. It says, all great leaders have skills in three distinct areas. Personal leadership. We'll ask you what that means, organizational leadership, and then interpersonal skills. So personal leadership refers to
how you conduct yourself, how you present yourself to others, you know, the way you carry yourself. Do you do what you say you're going to do? Your sense of personal integrity and ethics, the way you hold yourself out, and holding yourself to a higher standard. I mean, I think that's what personal leadership is all about. Personal leadership is about inspiring other people. You know, and having them look at you and go, well, gosh, maybe I should give that a shot. Maybe I should, you know, indeed, it's working for Dell. Maybe I should try it myself.
Yes.
Things like that.
Yes. Then comes the organizational leadership.
Yeah, organizational leadership to me is a little more administrative. But if you're, you know, if you're with a group, if you're with a club or an organization, you got to keep that group together.
Yeah.
So you've got to organize things like you've got to be able to run a meeting. You've got to be able to do things like, you know, take care of the finances, have those minute skills. Those minute taking skills. You've got to be able to recruit new members. You've got to be able to set goals for your organization and then find ways that your organization can go after those goals and pursue those things. So those aren't personal things. Those are things that your entire organization has to do.
And at that point, too, it seems to me that those personal skills, that personal leadership, bleeds into being able to provide organizational leadership.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
My dad used to say, if the meeting starts at 2 o'clock, you show up at 1:45.
Right.
If you're not there after 1:45, you're late.
Yeah.
Personally, I'm going to take responsibility and I'm going to instill that in the organization that I'm purporting to lead. And then comes this last part, and it's the interpersonal skills. And I think where a lot of us struggle more often.
Well, and that's one that I'm spending a lot more time on these days, because interpersonal skills are how you present yourself to other people. And since I work, my primary audience are college students, it's been a real struggle for them, because they spent 2 years locked in their bedrooms, you know, looking at a screen, you know, during the COVID pandemic. And so a lot of them are behind on their social skills. So I spend more time with them working with them to make eye contact with people, to teaching them some basic conversational skills. I even teach college students how to shake hands. And it sounds really kind of funny, but, you know, most college students are never taught how to shake hands. Especially the women. And you know, men are taught how to shake hands, usually by a friend or whatever, but sometimes not very well, you know. And so I teach them how to give a standard, you know, professional handshake, and even for the women, because women are almost never taught to shake hands. And these days, everybody shakes hands with everybody. I mean, I see two women to be introduced, and they're able to shake hands with each other.
Yes.
And when we were kids, that never happened.
Never happened.
You know, but now it's just a common thing these days. So that's just a real basic interpersonal skill that people have to have.
And is it in the fact that the behavior of that kind is an extension then of our communication with each other, right?
Oh, absolutely.
So the manner in which I greet you, eye contact, handshaking, all of that is about me connecting with you.
And also presenting yourself in a professional manner. You know, I mean, I
so
joke with
again, a standard that you've established for yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I talk to the students about, you know, all our different, you know, high fives and, you know, and you know, slapping hands
and the fist bump became
fist bumps
very popular.
And all those things that we do. And I see, you know, all those bro shakes, that's all great. And that's how we stay connected with our friends. But you don't want to go into a human resource department and do a job interview and then, you know, tell the manager, oh, I hope I can get the job, and high five them. You know, they're going to just look at you like, well, what planet
next
are you from? Yeah, exactly. So you've got to have those, you know, those important interpersonal skills, and that present yourself to a professional man.
What is most challenging, you think? Now, you've been doing this for a number of years. You've been on hundreds of college campuses around the country, and you have a lot of time with these students. What would you say is the most, or maybe among those most difficult things for them to grasp?
Well, really, they all have different challenges. You know, it depends on where they're from, you know, what part of the country they're in, their socioeconomic background. I was just at Laredo College, at Laredo, Texas, about a month ago.
Yes.
And did a full-day program there with students there. And, you know, a lot of the students I dealt with there, they're first-generation college students. And so they have a whole different set of challenges that they face. You know, they've got some family members that have such high expectations of them. They're like, how can I meet those expectations? And then they've got other family members that say, who do you think you are going to college? You know, and so they've got that whole balancing act that they're going through there too. And a lot of them are living in two cultures, because their family, you know, they may be from Mexico and Hispanic, and they're living in that culture, but they're also, you know, trying to succeed in the U.S. culture,
sure.
You know, culture. So it's a real challenge for those folks. And then, you know, I go to other states, and they have different sets of challenges. So it's different everywhere you go.
You came to us as a musician in your early days. You've been a musician and all of your life, and
yes.
You've been performing, recording. When did you say, I'm going to go do this? I'm going to go out and talk with college kids?
Well, I've always done this.
How did that happen?
Yeah, I've always done this to some extent, because as I would tour as a musician and do concerts at colleges, I would often meet with the students afterwards and say, hey, you know what would have made this even better? It would be if we had done this, or, you know, we'd put some posters up. And then when I would go to college booking conferences where they come to Fine Entertainment, I would actually do workshops and programs where I'd say, this is, hey, the best way to promote your events on campus is this. Or the best way to run your campus activity board meetings is this, based on my experience as a local, you know, volunteer and all the things I've done.
Right.
And then I began to really age out of the market, I mean, I was still actively performing as a musician, as a singer-songwriter in this market in the early 2000s.
Wow.
And that's a long time
it's
to
long
be
stretch,
singing
man.
For 18 and 19-year-olds.
Yeah.
You know, and it finally got to the point where it was just really hard for me to book the dates.
Yeah, I got
and somebody came to me and they said, you know, you're such a great a great trainer and communicator, you really should be doing, you should be doing these speaking programs. And so I put one together called Leading Well. And I'm sorry, Truly Leading. And I put this program called Truly Leading. And the University of Akron booked me to come in and do that program in the afternoon and then do a concert that night. And when it was over, they said, oh, we can't wait to get you back next year. They booked me back the next year. And then the third year, they said, we can't wait to get you back, but we don't have time to do them both, so we just want you to do the speaking thing and not do the concert. And I first went, oh, and then I was
Yeah.
And then I realized another door had just opened for me.
We don't have time now, but it is a great demonstration of what I have become very interested in over the years, and that's this business of reinvention,
right?
Which people oftentimes we don't understand. It's really just an extension or an exploration, expansion of who we are. Great example of that. And before we go, we've got to give a tip of the hat to our good friends at the Tallahassee Museum. You've got this Tallahassee Jazz and Blues Festival coming up the 25th, the 26th. I do see that Drew Tillman will be there, Tillman and Taff.
Oh, yeah.
You got Brett Wellman and Dave Messler. Great, great choice. King Cotton Band, the Coastal Highway. Goodness sakes. A Tallahassee Swing, Warren Sutton. These are just a few of the names. That's a great gig, isn't it?
Oh, it's a wonderful event. And it's amazing because we have all this great music in this town.
Yeah.
And people don't realize that Tallahassee has always been a force in jazz and in blues.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, in jazz, you know, Cannonball and Nat Adderley are buried like a mile from my home.
Indeed.
You know,
indeed.
And people don't even realize. I mean, people that, you know the name, you know, Cannonball Adderley, well, the fact of the matter is everybody knows Miles Davis, you know, the great psychedelic, you know, trumpet player.
Right.
But people don't know that Miles Davis played in the Cannonball Adderley band, you know. And so, I mean, he's had him that kind of, you know, and one of the earliest recording artist in the blues field was a guy named Tallahassee Tite, who was from he was born off Wadesboro Road in over in eastern Leon County, and he was one of the earliest. I mean, he was a contemporary of Robert Johnson. He recorded in 1933 and 34.
We had the opportunity in the first hour to talk at length with Gary Anton about the Bradfordville Blues Club.
Yeah.
So nice segue there, or tie in with the theme today, I think, is about finding our own voice, finding our own song. And you certainly have helped us do that through the many years that you've contributed. And in this conversation today, thanks for being with us.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Always great to see you, Brian.
Thank you, Dale. Folks, that's what we do here. We're called Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny for a reason. We're the production of Spatterwork Media and Entertainment, coming to you from the studios of Moose Magnificat, streaming 24/7, bringing you all local musicians playing their original songs. That is the sound of Tallahassee at Moose Magnificat. Find them online at moosemagnificat.com. I'll be looking for you again next week, and we'll say thank you to Carl Cerny, who is our executive producer. So come on, Tallahassee, come talk to me.